The most unique NBA podcast is out on Odyssey. Heat Check with Trista Crick.
NBA fans, listen up. I'm Trista Crick, host of the Heat Check podcast. And if you love this league, the storylines, and want a funny, digestible way to get all the news from around the association and someone to break down what's really going on straight up, no chaser, and make you laugh at the same time, follow the Heat Check on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
Ah, the satisfying sounds of more sales in your business. And from the sound of it, your business is growing. But you shouldn't have to pay more to scale your business. With Stamps.com, you can import orders from wherever you sell online, find the lowest rates with the fastest delivery times, and instantly deliver tracking updates to your customers and stock up on supplies. Get started at Stamps.com today with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, free postage, and a digital scale.
Live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of CBS Sports Radio here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to a Tuesday edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all of our great local CBS Sports Radio affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 158, the free Odyssey app, and of course, streaming on YouTube. 855-212-4CBS is the number to jump on in, 855-212-4227, and you could always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. Got Moist Mike and also Stuart Kovacs rocking and rolling with me all the way up until 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. Coming up at 4:20 p.m. Eastern, 1:20 p.m. Pacific, former Eagles linebacker Ike Reese will stop by, and then at the top of the final hour of the show at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific, James Palmer, who's a phenomenal NFL Network reporter, will join us. But let's start with the Philadelphia Eagles, who get stunned last night by the Seattle Seahawks. And Drew Lock was quarterbacking the Seattle Seahawks right before the game. All the attention was on Jalen Hurts. Was he going to play? Then we get word that Jalen Hurts is going to play. And then you had this mysterious quarterback situation with the Seahawks where Geno Smith was warming up, but there was an expectation that Drew Lock was going to play in the game. And if you watch the game, the majority of the game, you thought the Eagles were the better team. And this is why I'm now concerned with the Philadelphia Eagles. Two reasons. Number one, out of the three losses they just had, even though this was the closest, where they got blown out by the 49ers and they got blown out by the Cowboys, this one was the most alarming because they snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. They had this game not necessarily won, but they had a leg up and they had a serious advantage when they were up 17-10. And then even when the lead was truncated to 17-13, they still should have won the damn game. And I know Jalen Hurts was sick last night. He had a flu game, but that didn't impact him on the first drive of the game. When they marched down the field, they took off 8 minutes off the clock and they put the ball in the end zone. So I don't want to hear, oh, he was sick, he wasn't feeling 100%. He made two dumb decisions in the game last night. You're up 17-13. You just crossed midfield after an A.J. Brown pass and a Devontae Smith catch as well. So you had Brown and Smith both getting involved. They're going shortly down the field. They're at Seattle's 45. And Jalen Hurts, and I don't know if it was the play call or not, but they take a home run shot to Quez Watkins, and the ball gets intercepted. Where you're in the fourth quarter and you're up by four, you bare minimum need to walk away with the field goal, but you were probably, if you just kept it safe and if you were just playing it smart and if you kept on just hitting A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith for 10 yards, which you got twice on that drive, you probably end up putting the ball in the end zone. So the Eagles did survive that, but I thought that was a monumental play in the game because you had a chance, what it felt like, to put the game away. Now, with all that being said, it's still 17-13 late. Up until that point, new defensive coordinator Matt Patricia and the defense was doing a good enough job, and Drew Lock gets the ball back on his own 8. And there was under 90 seconds to go. And he marches that ball down the field in under 90 seconds, I should say, and he puts the ball in the end zone. And that Eagles secondary, it's garbage. It really is. That secondary is brutal. And James Bradbury, he couldn't stop anything. It was alarming. And I know Bradbury's not had a good season, but how much they abused him. And it's one thing to get abused by good quarterbacks, but you made Drew Lock look like an elite quarterback. That's a big-time problem. So it's time to press the big, fat, red panic button with the Philadelphia Eagles. I think a lot of us have already done that. But when this team was 10-1, there were conversations, oh, this team isn't as good as what their record says they are. And at that point, I was like, all righty, I'm not really going to listen to what those people are saying, because you got to remember, this team just went to a Super Bowl last year. They just lost to us, you know, in a Super Bowl. They do know how to win games, and we're going to bitch and complain that they're not blowing people out like last year when they're 10-1. But the last 3 weeks, it was eye-opening, because the small contingency of people that crushed this team for being 10-1 were telling you that this team is not as good as what their record says they are. We're absolutely right. And there's no other way around it. Because you could get blown out by the 49ers. You could get blown out by the Cowboys. And you could chalk it up to those things happen during a season. But after getting blown out by the 49ers, you would at least expect them to compete against the Cowboys. They didn't even compete. They didn't even deserve to be on the field with the Dallas Cowboys. But then you have all this talent with A.J. Brown, with Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert, DeAndre Swift, Jalen Hurts, Julio Jones. Like, we could go through the entire team. Kenneth Gainwell and the Hog Mollies up front of that offensive line. There is too much talent on that team. I don't care what you think of the Seattle defense. And brain flash, news flash for you, this ain't the LOB. You know, they have a young, up-and-coming secondary, but this is not a defense. They're improved this year, but they're not this great defense. And you could only put up 17 points on the scoreboard against this Seattle team who was playing with the backup quarterback? Like, the lasting image most of us have of Drew Lock is him in Denver celebrating on the sideline when he got off to that good start to his career. Since then, the dude's been a backup quarterback. And this Eagles defense, which played well for about 56, 57 minutes of the game, they showed you who they really were when, in the unthinkable, Drew Lock marches the team in a snap of a finger down the field. And it's not like you got a turnover that gave you good field position. You only had to get 25 yards. He went 92 yards and found Jaxon Smith-Njigba right down that right sideline for a touchdown. The Eagles season is over. Now, I know people are going to say, oh, Zach, that's too harsh. It's over in terms of this idea that this team is going to the Super Bowl. And that this team is going to win a Super Bowl. Because barring the 49ers just getting decimated with injuries, and they already went through their run of getting a ton of injuries, and they lost three games in a row, there's no way that the Eagles are going into San Francisco in Santa Clara and they're beating the 49ers. I just don't see it. And there's a major difference from last year's team to this year's team. And don't tell me it's because Shane Steichen's now coaching the Colts. Don't tell me it's because Jonathan Gannon, or every Eagles fan ripped regardless, is now coaching the Cardinals. This is on the players. Like, I was in that Eagles locker room last year. That team was one. That team was whole. That team had elite team chemistry. Where you saw the veterans that have accomplished a lot, like Brandon Graham, Lane Johnson, Fletcher Cox, Jason Kelce, like, that was their team, and they handed it over to Jalen Hurts. And Jalen Hurts was the heartbeat of that team. He was the backbone of that team as well. He was everything to that team. And you had a great mix of younger players and older players coming together. And they were dominant last year. They blew out, like, every single team, and they ran it all the way to the Super Bowl, where they had a 10-point lead at halftime, and they didn't get the job done. But this year, it doesn't seem like this is a team. It seems like there's a lot of individuals. And this is not just because they're in a three-game losing streak. There were obviously signs that some of us ignored and then some of us paid attention to when they were 10-1 and it just didn't look right. But you hear last week, Darius Big Play Slay, who's now probably done for the rest of the regular season, get on his podcast and go, oh, I played a perfect game up against the Cowboys. It was basically everybody else. That's not good to hear. That's not the sign of good leadership. That's the sign of an individual. And then last night, you had Jalen Hurts talk about the commitment issues this team is having. And then when asked to define what does he mean by that, he's like, I don't have a dictionary. But remember who that's coming from. That's coming from Jalen Hurts, the guy who's the leader of the team last year and still the leader of the team this year. And maybe that's him just caught up in the moment, in the heat of the moment, where he's just saying generic things because you're in front of the podium. But to say that there is a commitment issue, whether it was 100% fully meant or if he was just caught up in the moment in front of the podium, that is alarming. Like, that has the big red flashing signs going off in your head that something is wrong. And this team, I don't think they're going to be able to fight through adversity. Like, they could get to an NFC championship game. It's not because they're this great team. It's because the rest of the NFC, you don't really trust anyone outside of the 49ers. But as long as the 49ers are in that NFC championship game, I just don't see a way that the Eagles are walking into Santa Clara and getting a victory. And it's wild because I would have never said that before the start of the season. Here is Jalen Hurts last night at the podium talking about some of the Eagles' issues.
I've been talking about execution all year. Been on the same page. Everyone been on the same page. And we didn't execute. I don't think we were committed enough. You know, just got to turn it around. You know, it's a challenge that we have to embrace. Just continue to see it through.
What do you mean by that, about being committed enough?
Commitment. I don't know that I had a dictionary on me now. I don't know how else to say that.
I guess, how are you seeing that present itself?
Just, you know, it's a matter of being on the same page. It takes everyone being all in all aspects. And, you know, it starts with me.
So he's basically saying not everyone's all in. Not everyone's on the same page. And there's commitment issues with the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, when you get the, can you clarify what you mean by commitment? And he's like, oh, maybe I need a dictionary. I don't have one on me to look it up to try to tell you what I'm fully saying. That goes either one or two ways. One, that is a player that is annoyed at the team and realizes that everyone is not giving its all to the team. And if that's the case, there's no way that this team is going to recover. Or two, it could be a player that's at the podium that usually does not really show his emotions, and he usually gives you a lot of quarterback speak, like as we would say for coaches speak. And then if he didn't really mean anything by it, and it was just, oh, after every loss, I'm going to say, oh, we need to have everyone go all in, and we need everyone to be committed, then it's like, why should I ever take you seriously? And I like Jalen Hurts, and I like his leadership, but why should then we take you seriously with what you say? Because then when you actually think there are issues, we don't know if it's just going to be generic quarterback speak or if you're actually speaking your mind. There's a lot of problems. There's a lot of signs here. And all the signs are pointing to that this Eagles team, and they were one of the few Super Bowl or bust teams before the season started, they ain't going to a Super Bowl. They ain't getting a chance to right the wrong from last year and correct them blowing a 10-point lead at halftime. This team, Samter, they just don't feel like they're together. And you started to even see some signs and you heard some rumblings when they were 10-1. And I know when you lose three in a row, all the bleep is going to hit the fan. But this is a 10-4 football team. And I got no confidence in them for a team that has so many veterans and a team that is, when you look at them on paper, you're like, wow, there's a lot of weapons. I just don't believe they're going to have the mental toughness to fight through the storm that they're going to hear this week from the Philadelphia fans. Because if you thought it was bad the first 2 weeks, wait until now, because you teased them with the game that you should have won, and then you let Drew Lock go 92 yards down the field. This team the last 2 weeks have showed you why they're not as good as what their record indicated they were throughout most of the season.
How much stock do you put into the idea that teams need to go through this kind of stuff throughout the season to toughen them up so that when it comes playoff time that they know how to deal with it?
For some other teams that have not had this experience before and have not been this far, I would say, okay, I could listen to that. But I don't think what they're going through in these last 3 weeks is going to be anywhere close to the pain that they felt when you're up by 10 in a Super Bowl and you don't find a way to close it out. So I don't think they need tougher moments to get the best version out of themselves. And I'm not an idiot. Like, I understand no football season, unless you are the Dolphins of 72, is going to be perfect from start to finish. So there's always going to be hiccups. There's always going to be bad moments. This is just, though, not the sky is falling. That's not what this is right now. Because sometimes when you're losing and you lose 2-3 games in a row, everyone's turning at you because it's been mostly positive. This wasn't even mostly positive when they were 10-1. And sometimes you got to take it with a grain of salt and you go, oh, those are just fans. They don't appreciate winning. Everything's got to be a blowout. But no, there were signs. And it was easy to be like me to ignore them because they were 10-1 and they were winning close games. But this defense, this secondary, they just got carved up by Drew Lock. Why should I expect this defense against a good quarterback to make the stops? Like, we just saw it from Brock Purdy and Dak Prescott. They ran through this defense. And then you contain Drew Lock for most of the game and you let him run through you 92 yards down your throat in less than 90 seconds. So this defense doesn't have the toughness. The defense is horrible in the back end. And then offensively, it's like everyone's out of sync. The Eagles on paper have one of the more talented offenses from the line to the running backs to the wide receivers, the tight end, the quarterback in the league. One of the more talented offenses. And last night, it's like after the first drive of the game where they marched down the field, it was, oh, we're good, we're back, and we'll just tap out. They didn't play 60 minutes, and that's a problem. They had multiple chances for a team that has championship DNA. They had multiple chances to put away the Seahawks, and they left that door open, and eventually Drew Lock did the unthinkable. So I'm at a, you know, we asked Seth Joyner this last week, where's your concern level 1 through 10? And he said 10, and I was like, oh, that's pretty duh. Pretty severe number. Like, I was expecting like an 8.5. I'm now at a 20 out of 10. I just do not see how this team recovers. Where's your confidence level? The Eagles will turn around. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. This is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. More Aaron Rodgers news. When we come on back, we got some clarity on his future and if we'll see him on the field this season. We'll play that audio when we return in 5.
I'm Kate Abdo, the host of Kicking It, a new weekly show from the CBS Sports Golasso Network, where Clint Dempsey, Charlie Davies, Mo Adu, and I connect with the biggest personalities from global soccer and beyond to learn about their journeys and what makes them tick. This is the place for football fans to hear unfiltered conversations with the game's most familiar faces. So what are you waiting for?
Follow and listen to Kicking It on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. I'll get to the Aaron Rodgers stuff with Pat McAfee in just a second. But I'm reading a report. So as you may or may not know, last night when the Seahawks beat the Eagles, Jamal Adams was a healthy inactive. So I guess once he found that news, he was not in the stadium or left the stadium after learning he would be a healthy scratch. That was per Greg Bell, who covers the team, the Seahawks, for a long time. So Pete Carroll does a weekly radio hit, I guess, after the games on KIRO-AM radio. And he said, I think he was home when asked about Jamal Adams. Now, as U Stadium points out on Twitter, Julian Love started in Adams' place. He ended up being the star of the game with the two interceptions. The one on the deep shot in the early in the fourth quarter when the Eagles are up by 4 at the Seahawks 45, which they should have never taken that deep shot. And they should have just continued to get like 10 yards, 5 yards, and move the ball down the field. And then the other was right at the end of the game where somehow Julian Love got 2 feet down in bounds, as that was a miraculous interception. But once again, Hurts should have hit Kenneth Gainwell, and he could have probably ran for 20 yards and got them somewhere closer to being in field goal range. I didn't get the approach by Jalen Hurts to just take a deep shot there, because you were still, even if you hit the deep shot, it wasn't like you were breaking free from all those defenders. You would still have to line up for the field goal, but sometimes your eyes are too big in a moment like that, and you try to just make it all up in one play, where if you just slowly, even though you didn't have a lot of time, just move the ball down the field after that big run that he did have, that would have been the better option, and that's something I thought should have happened in the moment. It kind of reminded me of Super Bowl 42. After Plaxico Burress had that touchdown in the left corner of the end zone, Brady had time to go down by 3 to go get the ball in field goal range, except they just kept on taking deep shot after deep shot after deep shot to Randy Moss, and they kept on getting incomplete. But I don't like Jamal Adams. You know, I actually think Jamal Adams is my least favorite player in the league because this is a guy that he never holds himself accountable and he thinks he's like one of the greatest players to ever lace him up. And what he did a few weeks ago, I never talked about this, to Connor Hughes, who I don't even really know that well. And I've interviewed him here and there, who covers the Jets and the Giants for SNY locally in New York, where all Connor Hughes did was there was a play where Jamal Adams got beat and he quote tweeted and he wrote, "Yikes." And then Jamal Adams saw that and Jamal Adams responds back with a picture of Connor Hughes' wife and writes, "Yikes." So I thought that was very low class. And then to see him not play well after that and then end up getting benched by his coach and the replacement, Julian Love, ends up having two interceptions. That's a little sports karma for one Jamal Adams. And I know the Jets GM, Joe Douglas, is not all that popular these days, and we'll get to Aaron Rodgers in just a second, but that was maybe his best move, was getting two first-round picks for Jamal Adams, who is just an overrated safety and basically like a glorified linebacker pretty much at this point in this game. And it's one thing when you have that confidence and you're backing it up on the field, but when you don't back it up on the field and then act like a jackass off the field, that's what I'm just out on you. You know, I'm very simple. Like, I don't trash people just to trash people. I trash people when they're bad and then they don't hold themselves accountable and they don't look in the mirror and they point the finger in another direction. But anyway, let's get to Aaron Rodgers. This has been the biggest waste of everyone's time this year. To no surprise, this is how it's going to end, with surprise, surprise, the Jets being eliminated from playoff contention and Aaron Rodgers isn't going to be playing football for the rest of the season. And it's amazing to me, and it is remarkable in some capacity, that he has returned to practice. There was even a report last week that he was playing on the scout defense, which I don't know why you would have Aaron Rodgers playing scout defense. And he was intercepting a pass that was thrown. Shows you how bad the Jets quarterbacks are when Aaron Rodgers, with an Achilles that just got torn back in September, is able to pick off a football in December. But anyway, there was a report over the weekend that the expectation is that Aaron Rodgers is going to be cleared to play what would have been this week. That was the report. Well, it ended up that not being true. Here is Aaron Rodgers on the Pat McAfee show when he was asked, is he ready to return and play football this season?
If I was 100% today, I'd be definitely pushing to play. But fact is, I'm not. I've been working hard to get closer to that. But I'm still, you know, 14 weeks tomorrow from my surgery and, you know, being medically cleared as 100% healed.
It's a colossal waste of everybody's time. And I give credit to Rodgers. You know, you could say what you want about Rodgers. He's not a dope. And he's been the last 2-3 years the biggest drama story for the NFL. With his departure from Green Bay, not liking Brian Gutekunst, not liking Matt LaFleur, blowing off meetings with Matt LaFleur when Matt LaFleur was trying to give him more of an input on the offense, a story that we broke here on CBS Sports Radio where you keep Matt LaFleur waiting. And then you had all the darkness retreat. You had the ayahuasca, right? With all that stuff with Aaron Rodgers, he's been the number one person that we've talked about the most on CBS Sports Radio the last 3 years. The moment when Jordan Love gets drafted, the start of the demise in Green Bay, then winning two MVPs, then constantly coming up short in the playoffs, and then the departure, the trade to the Jets, and then four plays into the season. After Aaron Rodgers had that great entrance holding the American flag, running out onto the field, you had Aaron Rodgers tear his Achilles. And when he tears his Achilles, then it started, how do I keep myself in the news? How do I keep talking? He does that weekly appearance with Pat McAfee, and it was always this false hope that Aaron Rodgers was going to be able to come back this season. But every time he said something about coming back this season, I always said, I'll believe he returns on the field playing in a game when it happens. Because number one, he would have had to been able to have healed. And then number two, he would have needed to have the Jets to be in contention. And the Jets were eliminated last week in their loss to the Dolphins. And now it's, oh, I'm not 100% yet. But like the math doesn't add up. In terms of you not being 100%, like, which I get why you wouldn't. You're only 14 weeks removed from the surgery. But then why were you practicing? And you don't have to be 100% to practice. but why were you intercepting a football in practice? That seems like someone that's pretty damn close to returning to play, and now it's a few weeks. He was never going to play. But he kind of is right, and then he's kind of wrong, where he got back to the practice field earlier than any of us would have expected. So if the Jets were in contention, maybe, I don't know if he's, what, 75% right now, 80%? I don't know. But maybe he would have sucked it up and then he would have played. Maybe. But I think he knew down deep without Aaron Rodgers and without himself that this Jets team was going nowhere because they're basically the same Jet team as we saw last year. No offensive line. Yeah, you got some weapons in Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall. You got a solid defense, but without a quarterback, that defense does have some holes in it because they have to be nearly perfect to go win games. Here is Aaron Rodgers when asked about, will 2024 be his last year? A lot of people thought when he got to the Jets it was a two-year commitment and he would play 2 years and then he would leave. Here is Aaron Rodgers.
I don't think so. You know, I felt like when I came here that I got kind of a renewed passion and love for the game, and everything has been amazing here. I wanted, you know, at least 2 years. I feel like this year is kind of a lost year now that I only played a couple snaps, and I don't think that next year will be my last year. I feel like I can play more years, and I can be effective into my 40s, which is crazy because I thought that I'd probably be sitting on a couch somewhere at 40, but now I want to be a starter at 40. I want to be a starter at 41. I want to see what I can get out of this body.
And I think that's a very fair stance. And I think a lot of us just didn't adjust what the expectations were after the injury. Because even though this was a year, and it's a year of his life, it's really not a year of football in terms of him playing, even though he had to work at a crazy rate just to get into this spot where there was a opportunity for him to come on back and potentially play football, which we know is not going to happen now this year. So I actually do respect Aaron Rodgers in terms of he acknowledges it, and we'll see if he'll be able to stay healthy next year and how his body responds, but how his intentions are, he wants to give the Jets at least 2 years of him actually playing, which would be 2024 and then 2025. So a lot of people in the last few weeks, when they have soured on Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh, they said, oh, you have to bring those guys back next year because you really only have one more year of Aaron Rodgers. Just let this trio go together for one final season. Well, now with 2 years of Aaron Rodgers wanting to play football, I think it creates a different conversation because in theory, you could bring in a new coach and a new GM, and they know that they're going to at least have a two-year commitment, assuming Rodgers is okay with it, from Aaron Rodgers. Well, to no surprise, Aaron Rodgers today on the Pat McAfee show gave an endorsement to Joe Douglas, Robert Saleh, and also his buddy, Nate Hackett.
I believe in Joe Douglas. I think he's put together a lot of great drafts and a great roster. We obviously had a number of difficult injuries this season. I believe in Robert Saleh. I think he's a fantastic coach. I think he's about the right stuff. What you emphasize, you're going to get. And I think he emphasizes the right things, being about the right stuff, how to be a professional. I believe in Nate Hackett. You know, always have. I think the offense that he runs is quarterback friendly. Obviously, it was geared around me and my abilities and what I do well and my ability to get to the line of scrimmage and get us in good play and to survive bad plays.
As Deion Sanders would say, all that is a bunch of bull junk. Here's the reality. He likes Nate Hackett because Nate Hackett's like his best friend. He likes Robert Saleh because Robert Saleh lets him do whatever he wants, and he's a player-friendly coach. And then he likes Joe Douglas because Joe Douglas traded for him, and Joe Douglas allows Aaron Rodgers to basically make some personnel decisions. Aaron, who do you want? And they got a lot of those guys that Aaron Rodgers wanted, whether it was Alan Lazard, who's been terrible, Randall Cobb as well, and I bet you David Bakhtiari will be on this offensive line next year. But the fact that Joe Douglas, and according to Aaron Rodgers, built this great roster, I don't see that. Joe Douglas is supposed to know how to draft offensive linemen. This offensive line has been horrible ever since Joe Douglas got here, and it's still horrible right now. So I don't think the Jets have to bring back Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh, but you know whoever would replace them has to be approved by Aaron Rodgers. And Aaron Rodgers, the player, is great. But Aaron Rodgers, the GM, even going back to Green Bay, the guys that he wanted to stay that got cut by Green Bay, they didn't really do anything once they left Green Bay. So I don't think Aaron Rodgers, the GM, is a good GM. And if you have to approve who the GM and the head coach are you making the best hire? Probably not. You're just probably doing what best fits what Aaron Rodgers wants. So, like, I could sit here and say, yeah, the Jets should offer a first-round pick for Mike Tomlin. Would make sense. I should sit here and say the Jets should go pursue Jim Harbaugh. Give him a big contract. Would make sense. And I'm not telling you that Aaron Rodgers wouldn't want to play for those guys, but I don't think they're going to get a big-time name in there because Aaron is probably going to want someone that he could control. So in all likelihood, yes, Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh will be back as the GM and the head coach of the New York Jets. But I think Joe Douglas is a fine GM. I don't think he's good. I don't think he's great. And Robert Saleh, there's a lot left to still be desired. And when you don't have a quarterback, it's tough. But I don't like the way that Robert Saleh has necessarily handled everything. And we know he has a good defense, but still offensively, this is another defensive coordinator that is a rock star on the defense, but then has nothing on the offensive side of the ball. And I know they have Rodgers. I know they have Garrett Wilson. I know they have Breece Hall. I'm not saying that they don't have players, but they get no production out of their offense. And the hope is, right, Rodgers comes back next year, he plays well, and then this will be a playoff team, and you see how far he could take it, and it will take some pressure off of this great defense by having that quarterback. But this all goes for nothing if you don't find a way to bring in an offensive line next year. Because if you don't have an offensive line, Rodgers coming off this injury in his 40s, he's either going to get hurt once again, or he's going to get frustrated, or he's just going to get hit a lot, if not all the above. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. We'll take a timeout. We'll come on back with a little overreaction, proper reaction on this Tuesday coming off week 15. But first up with the latest CBS Sports Radio update, here is the Act Man, Rich Ackerman. The Defensive Player of the Week is sponsored by the Navy Federal Credit Union, who proudly serves the Armed Forces, DOD veterans, and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. In Sunday's 30-0 win over the JETS Jets, Dolphins pass rusher Bradley Chubb had 7 tackles, 3 sacks, and 2 forced fumbles, also a fumble recovery as well. Chubb now has 9.5 sacks on the season and 38 for his career. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. Let's get to a little overreaction, proper reaction.
Another NFL week is complete, which means it's another week to freak out about your favorite team. Which takes are truly crazy.
But sometimes a game can be so bad, it's almost good. You know what I'm saying? No.
And which are so crazy, they might be right.
He's 6'5", he's 245 pounds. He's probably a Popeye's biscuit away from being a tight end.
Zach lets you know in this week's edition of Overreaction or Proper Reaction.
Santer, usually you ask me the questions here. We're calling an audible. Little Omaha, Omaha. I have a question right out of the gate for you guys. And I actually don't even think Stu, who's the biggest Swiftie on the planet, even knows about this story. So Bernie Kosar, remember, a few weeks ago was seen with Taylor Swift. I guess this was at Travis Kelce's house before a Chiefs game. So Bernie Kosar was doing an interview on 560 WQAM the other day with Brandon Tobin and Leroy Horde, two great guys, two good talk show hosts. And Bernie Kosar said that photo was at his house like 3 hours before the game. We're having a pregame meal, and Taylor is so nice. She comes all by herself, and she's so cool. She brings her homemade cinnamon rolls for Travis for the pregame meal. Now, I've seen a photo of these cinnamon rolls. Because at first, I'm like, is that really a great pregame meal cinnamon roll? They look like they are to die for. They look elite. If she's actually making these at her house, she could open up a bakery. That's how good the cinnamon rolls look. So overreaction, proper reaction. Your significant other is making you something sweet. Cinnamon rolls are the best things for your significant other to make you. Overreaction or proper reaction?
I'm going to speak for myself. My wife makes an incredible pumpkin bread.
Ooh.
Like an absolutely, the word that you call me.
Moist?
That one.
Mm-hmm.
It is delicious, flavorful. So, and she also makes a great pumpkin bread. She also makes a banana bread, a banana cheesecake.
Oh, where are the samplings? We're not getting any for the show?
Well, you know, since the baby's come along, there's been a little bit less baking, but
had some responsibilities.
It's going to be right back on. So if I'm looking for something sweet, I do love a cinnamon roll. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But knowing my wife, either a banana cheesecake or pumpkin bread, that's what I want from her.
I have to shout out, by the way, Tiki Barber's wife, Tracy, who made banana bread last week. It was some of the best banana bread I've ever had.
She can bake. She actually made a pistachio bread a couple years ago. Ooh. And that was like, because I've had good banana bread. And banana bread is, you know, if you make it good, but it's all over the place, right? You always have banana bread. When have you ever had pistachio bread?
Never.
It was so good. I can't stop thinking about it. I always, every time around the holidays, I ask Tiki for pistachio bread.
Stu?
Mine's never made me that. She usually goes with the cookies or the cake. You know, I guess the more basic stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, I had a gal once make me, it was Oreo cheesecake, and it was to die for. It was awesome.
I told you, anything Oreo, I'm obsessed with.
Yeah, now these cinnamon rolls, Taylor Swift, if you're listening, I wouldn't be opposed to trying them. But I just don't think it's the preeminent item, so I would go overreaction as well. And all Swifties, by the way, my Twitter handle is at BigMikeCBS. Just don't tweet actually at Zach Gelb because I don't want to deal with any of the hate of me. People thinking I'm hating on the Taylor Swift cinnamon rolls. I'm not. I just don't think it's the best thing to have.
And it just feels like a weird pregame snack also.
Yeah, probably make me want to run to the bathroom.
Yeah, and a lot of sugar is probably not the ideal thing for a player who's getting in ready for a football game.
There was one time before a basketball game in high school, my dad made lasagna, and I had lasagna like 3 hours before the game. We were up big. We went on a big run out of the gate, and then I called a timeout and made a big run to the bathroom and had to have all the lasagna come out of my system.
Oh, that's not what I need to hear. Okay, let's move on.
We won the game, though.
Yeah, I don't need to know these things. Okay, I'm going to go to the bathroom myself.
I had a great game and a big game.
Oh, God, I did not need to hear that today. The Bengals got some more bad news today, learning that Ja'Marr Chase is expected to, quote, miss some time with a shoulder injury, meaning he'll be out at least this week and likely longer. Overreaction, proper reaction. Without Burrow and Chase, the 8-6 Bengals will actually miss the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that's the straw that's going to break the camel's back. There's just too many good teams in the AFC. Like either the Bills or the Dolphins, I think one of them are going to get a wild card spot. One will win the division. And that's now become a big conversation in the AFC South. You have the Jaguars, the Colts, and the Texans all vying for a division and then wild card spots. The Broncos still technically alive as well. And the Cleveland Browns are in a good spot too. I think that they're going to come up just short of making the playoffs. They'll be like, what, 9 wins, maybe even 10 wins? But I think they're going to lose a tiebreaker and they'll be on the outside looking in. So I will say overreaction. Or it should be proper reaction that the 8-6 Bengals will miss the playoffs.
Now, our boy Tommy DeVito has taken New York by storm, but his head may be getting a little bit too big for his accomplishments. This week, a New Jersey pizzeria announced on social media it would no longer be hosting a DeVito event today because DeVito's managers doubled the fee from $10,000 to $20,000. Overreaction, proper reaction. DeVito was wrong for asking for more money.
And the agent was claiming that they never had an agreement. I don't think they're wrong. If you think you're worth something, you should go ask for it. But then the restaurant has every right to say you're not worth that. So I don't think they're wrong for asking for more money. Now, if they lied to us and had an actual agreement and a signed contract and all that, yeah, then I think that's a little bit slimy and it's bad business. But if they never had a signature on a piece of paper, I don't have a problem with them asking for $10,000 more. I also have no problem with the restaurant saying no. So overreaction, proper reaction. DeVito was wrong for asking for more money. I will say that is a overreaction.
Now, the Atlanta Falcons are switching quarterbacks again, going back to Taylor Heinicke for the second time this season. Heinicke lost all three of the games in which he's played, while Desmond Ridder has lost two straight, including Sunday's embarrassing defeat to the now 2-win Panthers. Overreaction, proper reaction. The Falcons are making a mistake going back to Heinicke so quickly.
That is a overreaction. Desmond Ridder is just not good, and they're asking him to be better than what he is and more than just a game manager, and I don't know why they don't use Bijan Robinson more. We at least saw Taylor Ham Heinicke have some moments, and Arthur Smith, I think, realizes neither are good enough. So go to the guy that has more experience and the guy that didn't just throw away the game the last week in an inexcusable interception. So the Falcons are making a mistake by going back to Heinicke. No, that would be an overreaction. Taylor Ham Heinicke time coming to Atlanta.
Now, get ready to hear me talk a lot. This is a long one. Now, Steelers defensive back DeMonte Kazee was suspended for the rest of the season after delivering a nasty helmet-to-helmet hit on the Colts' Michael Pittman Jr. However, a surprising person came to his defense, Tom Brady.
Bah!
The GOAT posted on Instagram, quote, QB should not be throwing the ball in areas where they are exposing their own teammates to these types of hits. To put the blame on the defensive player all the time is just flat out wrong. Overreaction, proper reaction. We should put more blame on QBs for the bad hits their receivers take.
You could put a little blame on quarterbacks, And I'm not saying that it's easy to slow down as a defender. And I think there's players that you should try to avoid and put your teammates in better situations. But to make this as simple as, oh, it's always on the quarterback and it's always on the quarterback to put the ball in a better position. Yeah, I don't love that, because how many times, and this is coming from someone that loves Tom Brady, would he throw a ball in a questionable spot, Edelman would catch it and get hit, and then we'd all praise Julian Edelman's toughness. So we should put more blame on quarterbacks for the bad hits the receivers are taking. Yeah, I don't love that one. I would go overreaction.
Now, once again, while all eyes are on defensive stars like T.J. Watt, Khalil Mack, Nick Bosa, and Micah Parsons, the Vikings' Danielle Hunter...
And Miles Garrett.
I'm sorry, I forgot him. The Vikings' Danielle Hunter is just plugging away with another monster season. The 29-year-old three-time Pro Bowler is second in the league with 15.5 sacks, his fifth season with double-digit sacks, and is now 86 all-time in sacks. With likely many years left to play, will likely probably retire in the top 30 all-time if he continues on this pace. Overreaction, proper reaction. Danielle Hunter will make the Hall of Fame.
I'm going to go overreaction. He's got to have like three or four more seasons of this. And just because you do that, you only get five guys in the Hall each and every year. I still think it's very tough. He is a very, 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 very good player. He has a chance to be a Hall of Famer. But there are some guys that have over 100 sacks, like Kevin Carter, that aren't even in the Hall of Fame as well. Don't even get a sniff of being in the Hall of Fame. He's a rock star, but I just have a feeling he'll be just on the outside looking in, and he'll need a lot of years of support to get him in the Hall. But if he goes, has three or four more seasons of this, then it could be a different conversation. But for now, I will say that's an overreaction.
All right, last one real quick. Deron Bland leads the NFL with 8 picks, set the all-time record for 5 interceptions returned for a single season, and he's the second highest graded cornerback on PFF. So overreaction, proper reaction. Deron Bland should actually win Defensive Player of the Year.
I'm going to go overreaction. There's clearly a case to be made. I would say in his own team, Micah Parsons has more of a case, but I really do believe this is coming down to either Miles Garrett or T.J. Watt to win Defensive Player of the Year. It just feels like those have been the two names that have resonated the most, and I think one of those gentlemen will end up winning the award. So should Deron Bland win Defensive Player of the Year, I will go overreaction. All right, it is the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. We will take a look at the NFC when we return. Also delve into the chase to win the AFC East and the NFC East. And Ike Reese will join us coming up 25 minutes from now. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio on a Tuesday.
The most unique NBA podcast is out on Odyssey. Heat Check with Trista Crick.
NBA fans, listen up. I'm Trista Crick, host of the Heat Check podcast. And if you love this league, the storylines, and want a funny, digestible way to get all the news from around the association and someone to break down what's really going on straight up, no chaser, and make you laugh at the same time, follow the Heat Check on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.